This is WCAI. I'm Steve Junker. Sea level rise and increasingly extreme weather are among the most visible impacts of climate change. Coastal communities around the Cape and Islands are facing skyrocketing insurance rates and damage to homes and infrastructure. But for the residents of small island nations, climate change poses an existential threat. WCAI's Heather Goldstone has been following this story at the UN climate talks in Paris. She joins us now from Paris. Good afternoon, Heather.
Hi, Steve.
Heather, you've been interested in one island nation in particular, the Republic of Kiribati. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the Republic of Kiribati is a collection of 33 small islands in the Pacific Ocean, about halfway between Australia and Hawaii. These are mostly atoll islands, so they're slim strips of sandy land sitting atop coral, and most of the land there is no more than 6 or 7 feet above sea level.
How does that compare to scientists' projections for sea level rise?
Well, it depends on emission scenarios, of course, and what agreement is made here in Paris, but we're unlikely to see 2 meters or 6 feet of sea level rise by 2100, although that is a distinct possibility in the longer term. The thing is, recent research suggests that atoll islands like those in Kiribati could be uninhabitable long before they're fully submerged. If you put sea level rise together with more intense storms, that means that these islands are currently experiencing and will increasingly experience repeated ocean flooding, and that contaminates farming land and drinking water. Here's geologist and oceanographer Kurt Storlazzi of the U.S. Geological Survey.
These low-lying atoll islands have a very limited freshwater lens. If you have a wave-driven flooding event that puts oceanic salt water on top of the island, it contaminates the water. You know, if you have 1 part per 1,000 salt in the water, it's no longer, humans can't drink it.
Heather, what are the legal ramifications if an island disappears or has to be abandoned?
Well, we're seeing this play out on a smaller scale within the United States. There's an island town in Alaska that may only be habitable for another decade. But when we're talking about all of the islands that make up a nation, things get really thorny. There are, in international law, 4 criteria for statehood: land, a permanent population, a government, and international recognition. Without all 4, a country would technically lose its standing under international law. Michael Girard is the director of the Sabin Center for Climate Change Law at Columbia University, and he says that even a small population, a few dozen people, could potentially maintain a nation's status. Still, he says legal scholars are considering a workaround for the possibility that island nations might eventually become abandoned or submerged.
There is now talk of a new species called an ex situ state, a state that would exist outside of the territory where it had previously existed. But that has never happened, and it would require a new species of international law.
Girard says this hasn't reached diplomatic circles yet, and island nations have more pressing concerns. But Kiribati President Anota Tong told me yesterday that he thinks this should be on the international community's agenda and, quote, we're working on it.
I understand President Tong is already taking steps to secure land for the residents of Kiribati to move to in the event that it becomes necessary, but would that count for the purposes of statehood?
Girard says no, that Kiribati has bought land in Fiji, but that essentially makes them private landholders in another country, unless that country explicitly grants them sovereignty through some sort of international treaty.
Here's another question. How many of the island states facing these dire situations have large ocean territories and hold significant fishing rights? And could this new kind of disembodied state still have an exclusive economic zone?
Well, this is a possibility and a really important consideration for these nations. There's a group of small atoll nations who yesterday announced a new alliance, and they say they cover 10% of the ocean and 50% of tuna fishing. So this is really significant to the world. It's also incredibly important as a source of revenue for these nations. And Girard says that technically, if you don't have a coastline, you don't have an exclusive economic zone. But, and it's a big but, the law of sea does include some provision for locking in your coastline. And he says some of these nations have taken steps to conduct formal surveys and try to secure their exclusive economic zones and their fishing rights against future shrinkage or disappearance.
That's WCAI science correspondent Heather Goldstone reporting from Paris. Thanks, Heather.
My pleasure, Steve.
Our conversations with Heather are part of the Living Lab radio project. Major support for Living Lab is provided by the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment and by the Candida Fund. Additional support is provided by Lee McGraw and the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation.